This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. Hope you had an absolutely wonderful holiday season. I am Glenn the Geek. We're here on the Horses in the Morning Show, part of the Horse Radio Network. The date today is December the 26th, the day after Christmas, and this is episode number 1070. Today we bring to you an episode, the most recent episode of the Horsemanship Radio Show with our friend Debbie Laux. We think you're going to enjoy this episode here. She had a fascinating interview with a woman who wrote a book called Hollywood Hoofbeats, all about horses in the movies, and it was a fun interview. Matter of fact, she's Robert Mitchum's daughter. So if any of you who are a little older like me will remember who Robert Mitchum is, and I like the book so much that I actually bought one for all of the hosts as their Christmas present this year, and she so kindly signed it for me. So that's what we're going to be doing today. Of course, we have lots of fun stuff planned for you. On Monday, Jennifer put together the best of trivia, the most fun trivia moments we did from last year, thanks to EquityMFG.com. So we're going to get right into today's show right after this word from Kentucky Performance Products. This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Managing horses can be challenging. Each horse's personality affects the way he behaves and reacts to the world around him. Horses with certain dispositions can be at higher risk for developing health problems than others. High-strung or excitable horses are easily stressed, but so is the timid, quiet warrior. Stressed horses are more likely to develop digestive upsets that lead to colic, diarrhea, and ulcers. Nalox Advanced was specifically developed to support a digestive tract that is under stress. It sustains proper pH levels, reducing the incidence of ulcers and hindgut imbalances, while simultaneously supporting the healing of damaged tissues. Nalox Advanced supports the complete digestion of starches and sugars and sustains populations of beneficial bacteria. Make life a little easier on your sensitive horse and start him on Nalox Advanced today. To learn more about the ingredients in Nalox Advanced, visit Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 30 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we have an author who happens to be the daughter of legendary film star Robert Mitchum. Her name is Patrine Mitchum, and we have Year in Review with Monty Roberts. And that's where we get to travel vicariously with the most interesting horse adventures I know of, right? This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thank you for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and the 30th of the month. And I have my producer, Glenn, with me today. Hi, Glenn. It's been a few weeks.
Yes, it has, Debbie. I think it's been a month since I talked to you. Jennifer's been helping out here, so that's been nice.
She's been a lot of fun. We've had some fun shows, but I'm glad you're back for this one because this one's going to be really cool.
Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. That's right. Yeah. This is going to come out right before Christmas. So we're going to... it's going to be like the year-end blowout, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it is.
And pulling all the stops out.
And you guys, I mean, you know, you must have many fond memories of the ranch from Christmas time growing up with everybody around. I mean, of people. Yeah. Is there still a ton of people? Does your mom still cook? What happens at the ranch at Christmas?
Huge turkey. Huge.
Yes,
turkey.
I bet. Yeah. Can we have a 100-pound turkey, please?
Yeah, I've never seen one of those.
And I want to deep fry it in a cauldron, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's right. A trough.
Yeah. Just get one of the horse troughs, fill it full of oil.
Sounds a little dangerous, Glenn. No, we do have people wander through. We have people coming and going from all over the world, which is a lot of fun. You know, it's just pilgrimage time. Plus my kids and, you know, my extended family, the foster kids, you know, just everybody kind of wanders through over that week. It's like a week-long moment of Christmas, but it is always
fun. Well, I have a curious question for you then. You, when your kids were growing up, did you all go down to the ranch or did you stay home at your place for Christmas?
And starting those traditions? Yeah, I was going to ask you the same thing, actually. We kind of went off and on because I lived up in Washington State for a while, and flying with, you know, a 2-year-old and everything, yeah, that was a little hard. So we did off and on. And plus I have in-laws too, who appreciated being seen at Christmas, yeah, too, and two states away. So, but you know, now everybody wants to go to the ranch. It's the, yeah, fun place. Without kids and, you know, diaper bags and all that stuff, it's a lot easier. And everybody's grown up now. We're just waiting for that next generation to come and slow us down again. But right now, everybody enjoys being at the ranch on Christmas.
Now, does everybody cook, or has your mom always been the one to do that? Or?
She takes the brunt of it, poor, yeah, thing. She does a lot of cooking.
Does she like to do it?
I think so. You know, it's, yeah, tradition, so you don't even think about it, right?
Right.
Put it all together as usual, but she does work hard and we appreciate that. And we all like to, we have an old tradition, believe it or not, it is California, but my Irish grandmother used to bring the enchiladas on Christmas Eve, and we lost her a few years ago in her 90s.
Now, wait a minute, your Irish grandmother would bring, yeah, enchiladas?
Exactly. I know.
Shouldn't that have been haggis or something, yeah, you know?
Exactly. No, and her mother, really the Irish grandmother, used to grind her own chili sauce in her enchilada. So I don't know where this tradition comes from, but my mom remembers.
Did they take a vacation in South America and never come home? Or?
I don't know. Or, you know, when in California, you do as the California, I guess, yeah, when they moved there, they just adopted everything.
They adopted everything.
Yeah, yeah. But it's really good. So we're
no bangers and mash then for Christmas.
No bangers and mash. We tried those popper things, but they don't work that well these days. So they're made in China or something. But it'll be fun. It'll be a crowd. How about you? Are you going to be around in Florida for Christmas?
Yeah, I think we're going to be visiting some friends down here. And we're going to go down and spend some time with Dr. Wendy Ying of the Driving Radio Show, who lives, nice, in Sarasota, which is even warmer than where we are. It's about two
That's
hours
ridiculous.
South. Yeah. So we're going to head down there because it's not warm enough here. And then, you know, we always have friends we spend New Year's with up in the Carolinas. As a matter of fact, they live near Asheville. So they're about 45 minutes from Asheville, Greenville, South Carolina, and we used to go up in the mountains. As a matter of fact, we've been to the Biltmore a couple times for New Year's Eve.
So nice.
And we've been there when it's been snowing on New Year's Eve.
That's crazy.
It was absolutely beautiful, actually. It was just, we pulled in, and there was just snow everywhere. It was snowing that the time we pulled in. It was New Year's Eve. We ate dinner in anybody that's been there knows they have a restaurant in the stables, and you eat in the stalls. And we ate in the stall on New Year's Eve. And that's one of awesome. Jennifer's favorite rides of all time was at the Biltmore in Asheville. And I don't know if you've been there before, but it's...
No, I haven't.
It's one of the, you know, grandest houses in America. And it is just huge. And it is really cool because they have a trail ride concession there. And the day that Jennifer went with our friend, they went out trail riding together. They were the only two and the guide. So he took them, nice, out extra, and they were both experienced riders. So he gave them he let them have fun. And
full
you
deal.
Have that Biltmore, yeah, you have the grand house there, right there, you know, the mansion right there behind you as you're doing your trail ride. So that's,
nice,
one of her favorites, I think.
Holy moly. I bet you guys you deserve it. You work hard all year long.
I know. We get to take a couple weeks off.
Yeah.
So
I can hear,
nice,
you coming back on January 4 going, oh.
I know. That's usually what happens, too. That's usually what happens. Now, one of our favorite things to do is go to the parks, but we do not, Disney and Universal, but we do not do that over Christmas time.
Good idea. Yeah, you can do this anytime.
Us and 5 million of our friends.
Yeah. I know it's the land of the misfits. I know at Christmas here in Disneyland and Anaheim, you know.
Oh, you couldn't get in, Dan. I bet you they close it at 10 o'clock in the morning because it's packed.
It's packed. Yeah. That's a year full capacity. I think so. I mean, I think it's craziness. Yeah, crazy making. That's why we go to Solvang. It's not crazy making. It's beautiful.
I will tell you, though, that for your audience, that we've had something cool happen here with a host on the Horse Radio Network. His name is David Saunders, and he fills in once a month on the Driving Radio Show. And David was the coachman to Prince Philip and the Queen of England for 20 years. He's coachman for Gloria Austin and her coaches and her team of six Spanish horses, PRE horses, beautiful white horses. And he got a call not too long ago to help out. Disney is coming out with a live action, a real person Cinderella movie that they're doing. Oh. So it's a new Cinderella movie. It's already been filmed. It's coming out in March. And they made a Cinderella coach by magic. It's made out of a pumpkin, right? Well, they shipped that coach over from Europe where they filmed the movie. And it's going to be in the parades at Magic Kingdom at Disney World for 2 weeks over Christmas time. And they asked David to come down and provide the horses. And he's going to drive the coach down Main Street for the parades.
Lovely. That sounds awesome. So we're counterintuitive. Everything's going to animations these days. So Cinderella's going the opposite way.
Disney's been doing that. They've been making these live, live character movies off of the old animated movies, and they're doing it with Cinderella. The preview looks really good. And David will also be, you know how Disney does the parade for Christmas Day in the morning. They have the parade that they put on ABC coming to you from Disneyland and Disney World. Well, David will be leading the parade, driving his horse, Gloria's horses, with this pumpkin carriage. So,
how beautiful.
He'll be driving Cinderella and Prince Charming. So in the parade.
We'll have to turn on the tube.
Yes.
That sounds awesome. It'll be on TV, yes?
Yes. They actually, today, as we're recording this, the 9th of December, they are filming it. They always film that parade ahead of time.
See.
And it's an absolutely beautiful, not a cloud in the sky, 50-degree day here in Florida. So it's absolutely beautiful for the filming of the parade.
We can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's something cool that's happened that I thought you'd be interested in. That
is cool.
You know, David's driven princes and queens and things like that. And we said now he's moved up the world. He gets to drive the mouse. So, you know.
That's right. Finally, the mouse.
Yep.
That is awesome.
Well, we have a lot of guests to get to and some good stuff.
We do. I think people are going to just love both these segments, mostly because we've got somebody new that we've never had before here.
And it ties into my conversation about movies.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about Hollywood, though. The western side of the United States, it's very western-centric here. And then, of course, we'll finish up with the ultimate western cowboy that I know, which is Monty Roberts.
And Monty's doing his year in review like we do every year on the show.
Yes, I say
that we've done it once before because that's how old
our long
been.
History
but,
is.
Yes, but now we can say it's a tradition because this
we
is the second time.
It's my tradition.
That's right. That's right. But first, I think we have to do a commercial for one of our terrific sponsors.
That's right, IFA.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at IFA.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Up next, our next guest is Patrine Day Mitchum. Some people will recognize that famous last name, but I know her as an author of Hollywood Hoofbeats, and she is a terrific author at that. What she has done with Hollywood Hoofbeats In the second edition now, the second version is add the most comprehensive list from the very beginning of Hollywood equine movies, Western movies, horse movies, all the way to the most fantastical movies out these days like Avatar. But all of them have to do with our equine friends. Welcome, Patrine Day Mitchum. I'm so excited to have you on the show today, Patrine. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Debbie, and I'm just so thrilled to be here with you today. Thank you for including me in your show.
Happy to. I think people are going to be having a lot of fun with this today because who doesn't love a Western? Who doesn't love to know a little bit about the backstage of the Western and things that went on? And who doesn't know more about it than you? I mean, you've really grown up. You're not 150 years old. We all know this. So you didn't live all through this, but you've experienced a lot of it living in the West. Tell me a little bit about what got you interested in writing this book first.
Well, it actually started as a documentary film. I was doing research on a project, and that film never came to be, but I was just got hooked on the subject. And it's not just horses in Westerns, but really all movies. And, you know, what I came to discover in my research was that the entire movie business really started with an experiment with a horse and a camera. So there arguably might not be a movie business if it weren't for a horse. At least I like to think that way.
I totally agree. Tell us that story. I think that is one of the coolest parts of the book. I mean, that got me right up front, was that the original Stanford moment that was set up by a very famous man. Everybody knows his name, but I don't think they would know him for how he started the very first moving picture.
Well, Leland Stanford, who was one-time governor of California, he also owned saddlebred racing horses, which are harness horses that race at a trot. And he and a friend had a bet going as to whether at some point in the racing gate, a horse would have all four feet suspended off the ground. So in order to, you know, solve this question, Stanford hired this obscure English photographer named Edward Liebridge to photograph a horse in motion. And what he did was he set up cameras at intervals around the track, and they were synchronized to go off at 21-inch intervals as the cart went by. So it took half a second to take 12 pictures, and in those 12 pictures, it was shown that the horse in question, whose name was Abe Edgington, actually had all 4 feet off the ground. Well, this started a whole series of photographs that Mybridge took of Stanford's horses. And these early, they were called the motion studies, and these early motion pictures were really the first motion pictures in America. So this really kicked off the motion picture business. And after this series, the famous Thomas Edison in 1894 started making motion pictures, and some of his earliest subjects were horses because they're just so fascinating to watch in motion. Mm-hmm. So his very early movies were quite short. I mean, there's one that just shows, it's called The Burning Stable, and it just shows a white horse being led out of a barn, a burning barn. So, but it was just a very captivating image to see a horse in motion, and really they were the backbone of the motion picture industry in America.
Really, yeah, what they'd never thought of that before, right? And who knew that Thomas Alva Edison had anything to do with the first movies? I didn't know that had anything to do with it, but he, and that was like 16 years later, too. It was a slow crawl that the movies started in. I love what you said. I mean, it's such a tribute to the horse, to the horses. It's fun to say that it's a book about movies, and it's fun to say it's a book about Westerns. But really, I read this as a tribute to the thousands of what you call equine actors who've entertained the world since the start of silent movies. Is that what you, would you describe it that way too?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I just feel like the horse really deserves as much recognition as anybody else in the movie business, at least in the films that have horses in them, because they work so hard, and you know, many of them are specially trained to do specific stunts. Certainly in early Westerns, they were as popular as their human co-stars. I mean, Roy Rogers has a famous quip. He says, you know, I think that as many people could come to the movies to see Trigger, his you know, horse partner, mm-hmm. as they come to see me. And I think it was true. It was, you know, Roy Rogers and Trigger, or another, you know, early singing cowboy, Gene Autry, and his famous horse Champion. Mm-hmm. Now, they were duos that were really, really popular because of their partnership. So the horse really made a very huge contribution to film, and continues to do so, by the way. You know, we're mm-hmm. still seeing great horse films like War Horse recently, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Oh, golly, they're even Westerns are being made as we speak. So
yeah.
it's pretty exciting that the horse continues to have a role in the motion picture industry. But yes, I would say my motivation and what was thrilling to me was to really dig in and find out about these individual horses and where they came from, and if possible, who bred them and who trained them, and you know, what was their real name? Like, what was Trigger's real name, which turned out to be what was Trigger's real name?
I don't remember that.
Now I'm
yeah,
stumping myself. Golden Cloud. Golden Cloud was Trigger's real name.
Wow,
Mr. Ed's real name was Bamboo Harvester. You know, finding out all these interesting details was what really excited me in writing this book and researching it.
I love that. I'm so glad you put it all together, too, because what a legacy this book is, too, and a real a sample for us to follow, too, to keep this tradition alive of thanking those early adopters and those early. You said that there were certain horses that stood out from film to film, and you developed some favorites in writing the book, and it made me think. I love horse people who get to know the personalities of their horses, and everybody does that's been around horses long enough. What were some of your favorites? And can you tell us a few little stories about, like, Dice and some of those cute horses?
Oh, Dice. Well, Dice was a really cute black and white paint horse, and he was trained by a gentleman named Ralph McCutcheon, who also he trained another one of my favorite horses, Highlandale, who I'll get to in a second. But Dice was just, he didn't make that many films, but he was just so distinctive looking. He made a few movies. I don't know if many of your listeners will remember the Dagwood comic strip, Dagwood and Blondie, mm-hmm. Or actually Blondie comic strip. But there were some movies made with Dagwood and Blondie, and Dice was featured in several of them. And he was just did all kinds of crazy tricks, like, you know, sitting down and. At one point, he gets into an elevator and rides up to Dagwood's office. But the thing about him was he just had such a crazy cute face. He's sort of a bald face with a blue eye, and he just had a lot of expression. He was also in Duel in the Sun with Gregory Peck in a great scene where he does some tricks to impress the leading lady in that film. And it's just a really cute little sequence where he picks up a hat and does, you know, sort of typical trick horse behaviors, but just very, very cute. So he was just one that I really kind of fell in love with and looked for in films. And the Highlandale, who I mentioned, was also trained by Ralph McCutcheon, began his film career as he was only 18 months old when he got the role of Black Beauty, which was released in 1946, the 1946 version of Black Beauty. Mm-hmm. And he worked at Liberty in that film, meaning without a rope on him, and just was a stunning performer. Mm-hmm. And he went on to make a number of movies, including a very famous movie called Giant with Elizabeth Taylor and Rock Hudson.
Right.
And in that film, he has a very famous scene at the end of the film where he pretends to be, he's not pretending to be lame in the film. He's appearing lame in the film, but of course he had to be trained to look lame. And mm-hmm. he has to walk across a pretty large expanse, limping on three legs. And and then come and stand at this hitching post with his head down, and just it's a stunning performance. And he actually won an award for that, the American Humane Association, which is the organization that monitors animal actors and child actors in film, used to give awards, and he won an award for that performance. And then, like so many actors in the old days, after his movie career, he went on to a successful career in television and became Fury. So many people know him as Fury, which was an NBC series starting in 1955 and was hugely successful. And Hylandale actually got a salary of $1,500 per episode, which was a huge amount of money in those days.
That is.
I mean, he actually made $500,000 in 8 years, working only 4 months a year, which is pretty amazing.
It's a good gig to get. Yeah, that's a good
gig. That's pretty great. Yeah. So he was one of my favorites. He was an American saddlebred stallion, a black stallion, and just a gorgeous horse. So another one of my favorites. Mm. And in Westerns, I think my most beloved horse is a horse named Steel, who is a quarter horse, chestnut horse with a what we call a flaxen mane and tail, sort of a blondish mane and tail, and a big bald blaze face and stockings, and very, very flashy horse. But he was very tame and was very, very easy for actors to ride. So he was sort of sought after by many actors, including my father, who rode him in a couple of early movies. My father, Robert Mitchum, rode him in his first starring role in the movie called Nevada. And the producers were smart enough to give my father, who barely knew how to ride, a seasoned horse. But, everybody loved to ride this horse. Gary Cooper, Gregory Peck, John Wayne, Joel McRae. And Ben Johnson, who made many movies with the famous Western director John Ford, riding Steel. So you can see many examples of Steel if you want to go rent some of those old John Ford movies.
I was going to say, you watched a lot of movies to write this book. What did Steel end up teaching a lot of those stars to ride, basically?
Well, I would say probably so. I mean, of course, the wranglers at the stables would work with him, and there was a gentleman named Ken Lee, who was kind of responsible for keeping Steel tuned up, and he would give the actors riding lessons as well. I would say that was a team that worked really well for the actors to have Steel and Ken Lee. And there's quite a bit about Ken Lee in the book and his contribution to movies. And there's actually a picture of him on Steel in the book. So.
There's always those detractors who will say, the movies have been horrible for, from the humane standpoint of horses. But I think very few people will know that I was interested that Errol Flynn really was instrumental in getting a lot of those laws changed or at least enforced.
Well, what happened in that case, yes, you're right. In some of the early films, horses were not well treated, and in order to create the spectacular falls, they were actually tripwired and sometimes forced to run into pits and off cliffs. And there were a lot of equine fatalities in the early days. It wasn't just that's the way it was all across the board. There were also actors and producers who really had a great consciousness about animal welfare, but it wasn't enforced, and a lot of producers just, were after the fast and easy way to do it and didn't care about the horses. And in The Charge of the Light Brigade, which was a film in 1936, which had a famous scene with a bunch of horses charging down a mountain, a number of horses were tripwired and fell, and Errol Flynn was the star of that film, and he did not realize that this was going to be the case when he started out riding in this film. Of course, being the star, he was not on a horse that was wired to fall or anything like that. But when he saw what happened and how these horses were treated, he was outraged, and he spoke out quite publicly, probably much to the chagrin of Cecil B. DeMille, who made the movie. But he did speak out quite publicly, and he was instrumental in raising public awareness and with getting the involvement of the American Humane Association in monitoring animal actors. So he's one of my personal heroes, for not only because he was incredibly handsome and a good actor, but because he was such a lover of horses.
Mm-hmm. Good. And he really did make a change then, being influential like that in the going forth. I think horses are well treated now. I mean, talk a little bit about War Horse and the juxtaposition of the old Westerns that use nothing but live horses to animations now.
Well, you know, War Horse actually used live horses in a lot of the scenes that you might think they did not, but they were... War Horse employed some very well-trained horses, and I think you might be speaking later to a gentleman named Bobby Lovegren who trained the horses for War Horse or trained the Star Horse.
Yeah.
And, there's one scene where his horse Finder, playing the lead horse, Joey, actually faces a tank and runs over the top of the tank, and he really did that. I mean, it was...
Is that right?
Yes, it was a very controlled stunt and very, very carefully done. But, that was absolutely, absolutely a real
amazing
thing.
Amazing.
Yeah, trained him to do
but
that.
But the horse that was caught up in the barbed wire, that was an electronic horse. I don't know what they call it, animatronic?
Yes, there
Is that
was
right?
an animatronic horse in that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, in the scene, the horses, it's in a sequence called No Man's Land sequence.
Yeah.
And No Man's Land was an area of the battlefield that was full of barbed wire, and the horse gets trapped in that barbed wire. So, yes, they did build a realistic life-size replica of Joey, the lead horse, the special effects supervisor says that they had four or five puppeteers buried beneath the ground operating the horse.
Oh my gosh.
So, and then the real horse or Finder, Bobby Lovegren's stunt horse, was brought in for close-ups of Joey's face and had to lie down in the mud for these close-ups. So he still made a big contribution to that sequence.
It's fantastic. It's such a niche profession to be an animal trainer for the movies. I'd love to have Bobby Lovegren on with you too. Well, maybe you can do a follow-up interview and have you to tell us about the training of horses for these movies. Do you know personally, besides Bobby, are there any more around the world like him, or does he literally go all over the world and train these horses for the movies?
Well, he does, but there are several others working today. Rex Peterson is one who's a longtime trainer. He worked on Horse Whisper with his wonderful horse, Hightower, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago at a ripe old age, I might say. But he was trained to do, the charge towards Robert Redford in the film. He charges at him when he's playing Pilgrim, the wounded horse. Mm-hmm. And he was actually just one of the sweetest horses that ever lived. I actually got to ride him, and he was just a sweetheart. But he had all these amazing tricks on him, behaviors that he would just, Rex would cue him with a whip. Not, I don't mean by hitting him, but just as a eye cue, like a conductor leading an orchestra is how the trainers like to describe it. And Hightower would see the whip flick in one direction. That would mean to bow or to lie down or whatever it was. So he was a very highly trained horse, and Rex continues to train today. Tad Griffith, who is a stunt rider but also trains trick horses, he's very accomplished. There are probably others I don't know about. Right now, busily training horses to do all kinds of things.
Yeah,
but it is somewhat of a lost art, just because we don't make those kinds of movies so much anymore.
Right.
Bobby Lovegren also worked on Lone Ranger, and there's quite a few scenes with the one of the horses that portrayed Silver with Johnny Depp doing some very cute work up close at Liberty. And that was all trick behavior that was trained.
Is it hard for you to watch a movie and not go, I know that horse. Hey, he didn't have a white stripe on his face last time I saw him.
Well, I get a big kick out of recognizing horses from film to film, and to see, you know, if I can see where they put makeup on them. For example, with War Horse, because there were so many different horses portraying Joey, they did have to have special makeup on, and that is discussed in the book. And I was fortunate enough to get some photographs with the makeup artist painting a star on one of the horses' face. But I can suspend disbelief. I'm a good audience member. If it's a good film, I just get carried away in the film, and I can be fooled just as much as anybody else.
That's nice, because I think horses in movies is the biggest carrier awayer for a lot of us that can exist. You know, it was hard actually to watch War Horse, because as a horse lover, you know, you think, oh, this is going to be bad for the horses. But even then, you can suspend belief, and they're kind these days not to to do too much that you can't stand, although I know a few people who couldn't watch that either. But I know there's a movie coming out with Homesman that's coming out with Tommy Lee Jones pretty quickly here. So I'm excited that the trend might be that there's Westerns. Do you think that actors like playing in Westerns? They like playing with the horses?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've never met an actor that didn't want to be a cowboy.
That's great.
You know, I think it's great fun for them. I mean, I would love to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that it just, you know, speaks to something kind of primal in all of us. But I think that there'll always be Westerns, you know, certainly not as many as were made in the golden era, but I think that, you know, directors love to make Westerns and actors love to play in them. So I think that we'll always have them coming along.
That's great. Good. So. That's hopeful. Did your dad ever put you in a cameo role, or are there any movies we can point and say, oh, I saw you in there?
Nope.
No.
I had a very, very small part as an extra in a movie called The Mechanic with Charles Bronson. And most of me wound up on the cutting room floor. But if you watch really closely, there's a party sequence. And I think I'm on screen for about maybe 0.2 seconds.
That might be hard to search out. Okay, so we're going to have to get you a role. Hopefully this book will get you a role in there. You deserve it, because it's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful tribute. And the photographs, I mean, it's a pictorial. It's definitely a coffee table book that has so much substance that it's as good a book for the head as it is for the coffee table. I loved it, Patrina. And I was really glad that you agreed to let us know about this second edition. Proud of you for getting,
thank you. It's
really
my great pleasure. It's, you know, I just never stopped being fascinated by the subject. And I was glad to have an opportunity to do a new edition and put 9 new films in the book and many more photographs from my archives, because I really was fortunate to get a great collection of photographs from a variety of collectors. And so, yes, there's some amazing photographs that you won't see anywhere else in this book.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put a link to how people can get this book in there. And I highly recommend that they get it as Christmas presents, because people will be impressed by this gift. They will love it.
Well, thank you for saying that. I have to say, I think you're right.
Good girl. Well, see what you can do to get Bobby and you together. And we would love to have you back if you'll come and share some more. And Patrine's book can be found at HollywoodHoofBeats.net. And I understand that you'll sign some of these books. Is that right, Patrine?
Well, so yes, they can be ordered. There's a link on that website to a store called Out West Boutique where signed copies can be ordered for Christmas.
Very nice. They'll
ship right to you wherever you are.
And there's still time. This should air on the 15th, so I hope people will grab that. And they'll probably be people that you can't even think about right now, but they should go on your HollywoodHoofBeats.net and look that over. I bet you'll think of lots of people that would love the book.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I'm dedicated to training horses without pain. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. Western, English, the beginner, or the advanced rider, it doesn't matter. You can connect with other students online too, on our forum, and there's a new lesson every week. It's a lifetime of learning for you on my Equus Online University at MontyRoberts.com.
Up next, we have our trainer's tip. And this week, we have Monty speaking about animal wound and infection care. Pretty interesting stuff. I'm glad to have Monty Roberts back here for our this week's trainer's tip. And I know that you were telling me a little bit about equine skin care and some things. So I would love for you to elaborate for our listeners today, your trainer's tip on some of the skin care product that you like.
Debbie, I'm so excited to do this for you, and I'm not going to give you products, but I'm going to give you one product. It's called Coragem, C-O-R-I-G-E-M, Coragem. And it's an incredible product that was discovered in the Amazon. And the killer bees have a lot to do with it because it's propolis. What they use to stop the funguses and the bacteria from eating their honey up. And the discovery of this is by a New Yorker that went down there with a team of people, and they actually went right into the jungle, and they were looking for something else. This came ancillary to their original project. But Coragem does unbelievable things. And for that set of, let's say, dew poisoning or cracked heels, whatever you want to call that fungus that eats up the pasterns of the horses, they become chronic. And I had one mare that was chronic for 4 years. Everything that they put on failed, and they couldn't use this mare. She was shortlisted for the our Olympic team in dressage. But Coragem, 4 days later, she was walking sound.
Whoa.
Four days later. Coragem is a miracle worker. And research shows that Coragem offers antiseptic, antibiotic,
so it kills. It's in there. Okay.
Antifungal, and even antiviral properties. And it needs to have all those properties if it's going to keep those animals off the honey of the killer bees. And killer bees can do some good things, too. Coragem is one of those things. It's an unbelievable wash for the body that stops girth itch like you cannot have ever seen
before.
Yeah,
that's a big one. Yeah.
So, it's a big one in our industry, but Coragem puts an end to it, and you can just dust it onto brushes, and then you're actually helping the body as you clean your horse. I am sold on Coragem, and it's 4 years now that we've been, putting it on our horses and experimenting with various things. And it is an ace product. You cannot believe how good it is. Coragem from the Brazilian rainforest.
You know, I just went and Googled this product so that I could see how you can find it. So I found it at CoragemAnimals.com. Coragem is Coragemanimals. CoragemAnimals.com, and they've got a promo code on there for you. It says, if you say Monty in the promo code, you get 10% off and free shipping. That's a good deal. I'm glad.
Monty with the Y.
To know, good tip of the week. Thank you. Up next, we have Monty Roberts, and this is his now famous year in review, where we get to look back at all the exciting things that he got to do, and I get to pummel him with questions about those places that sometimes he doesn't talk about because he's so exhausted when he comes back from trips, I don't get to hear about them. So this time, this is my year in review and my gift to you. Welcome back, Monty Roberts. Hi, Dad.
Hello, Debbie. How you doing?
I'm great. We're excited because it's our holiday edition year in review, and we couldn't do that without you. It's now our tradition. So we would love to.
That's cool, but we better hurry because I got things to do. I mean, you can't be sitting around. This is at 3 o'clock. I'm going in the round pen with a wonderful horse and a dressage rider and everything. So fire away. I'm ready.
All right. I don't want to wear you out now, but we're going to go through a year in review.
Good.
And I know there's some highlights in here, so we'll go fast. But you know what? When I go through this, it does actually exhaust me because I realize we kind of lived through all this. But I think people will be interested because you are the most interesting equine man in the world. So,
okay.
But one thing I wanted you to know, and I don't know if you realize this, but our Equus Online University turned 5 years old this last year, just this recently.
No,
Yeah.
It,
five.
it's got to be 1 year old before it can be 5 years old. Holy moly. This is crazy. And I heard there was 330-some lessons already up there.
You pass. Okay, you knew how many lessons were up there. That's right, 330.
And Debbie, I'm told that if you took all those off and made DVDs out of them, they'd be worth between $4,000 and $6,000 U.S. and you're offering it for pennies a day.
You don't get into the back office stuff, so I know, and people won't.
I know.
Pay
I
that.
Just heard it. Yeah.
But I'm really excited because it really is becoming a volume of a legacy of your teaching. So real excited about it, and I'm proud of that. So, without further ado, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about each one of these highlights as we go through the year. And I remember at the beginning of 2014, a really cool opportunity came up to go back to Australia to train with Gay Waterhouse. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure can. I was sitting around after Christmas and New Year's till about the 5th of January when I took off for Sydney. And I was working here and doing things. I'm not inferring that I had a day off, but I get to Sydney, and this woman, apart from me, has more energy than anybody I have ever met in my entire life. The lady sleeps about 3 hours a night, I think, and literally she's training at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and then you'll see her at the races in the afternoon, and then she'll be out to dinner meetings in the evening.
She is a trainer at the track. We should introduce who she is and what she does.
She's the trainer of Australian racehorses. You know, like the highest quality they've ever had by multiples, and she just continues to win and be the leading trainer down there year after year after year. She inherited it from her husband, who went off in another direction with gambling business, where online gambling kind of thing. But she is absolutely a female phenom, the likes of which nobody's ever met. It's very hard to work for because you've got to put on an iron suit and just ask yourself for every cell of energy every day. She's amazing.
But it worked out pretty well. It worked out pretty well. You met some pretty amazing people down there that you started training on for her, have ended up being really great horsemen down there too. Young kids.
Yeah, I've got some young kids down there that are doing extremely well. Australian kids and New Zealand kids, the same. But things are changing there, but very slowly. It's extremely difficult to make changes there because their whole racing system is very, very machine-like, and the regulations are incredible. Mm-hmm. But I got up every morning at 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I went to dinner with them at 6, 7 o'clock in the evening. They were still doing meetings when I left. It was unbelievable, and I was there through till part of February, where I was off to England, back through California, but off to England for the tour in the winter time. This one was March, and I had some great demonstrations there, and things went really well. And I had to get back here in April. Surgery.
I love talking about Martin Clunes, though. You've got to tell us. A lot of people know who Martin Clunes is, and I know you played horses with him in March in the tour.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
He's the nicest guy in the world since the loss of John Forsythe. And I call him the John Forsythe of the English set. And he has TV show after TV show. Animals are his favorite subject, and he likes to do animal shows.
But like horsepower.
Doc Martin is his.
Doc Martin.
Yeah, horsepower he does. But Doc Martin is his, his bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And the guy is just absolutely phenomenal. The nicest guy you ever met.
What did he do?
About 240 pounds.
We did
a thing with him on the teaching the horse to come to the mounting block.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. It was at the Hand in Somerset. Clevedon, southwest England, and I just admire him so. And we're scheduled to be with him again in March 2015. So I'm looking forward to that.
Good. And then in April, I know you went to Germany first. Was that, you started to talk about a surgery. What was that?
Well, yeah, I went to Germany and I did a tour of Germany. And then I came back here April the 28th. I had a surgery that laid me up for a few days and then got back to work because I had
about
a particular, I had a particular lady that I won't go into, a very high level celebrity lady that had a horse that came here from Europe and did some awful things and really put people in jeopardy.
The horse
and
did.
She needed,
not the lady.
Yeah.
Oh,
not the lady at all. The horse. And the horse came here to flag us up for my summertime relaxation time. And he tried to tear everything on this place down and hurt people. But it turned around for me. In fact, he was actually scheduled to be put down. And then I got it turned around. And I just watched him. I'm at the house like minutes after I watched him go through some incredible displays of tranquility and low-level heart rates and stuff like that. So he took up a lot of my summer. And I had four and then five interns here most of the summer.
That's right.
And they were from all over the world, but I mean all over the world. And what a joy it was to work with them and watch them grow and learn as we went through. And I've got some disciples out there now that I tell you are taking the word onward. And it won't be long until they'll say, yeah, I remember that Monty Roberts. He did all right, but boy, we've
good.
Got some good ones now. You know, because they're going to go right on by me. Unbelievable.
It's a great foundation.
How this whole thing is whirling into shape. And
back in May, you had all those instructors here. Speaking of which, disciples,
we had the instructors meeting, mm-hmm. Global meeting in May, and that was great. We had 20 some instructors mm-hmm. here. It's mm-hmm. hard to get them to travel and come to California, which is sort of off center to the whole thing. We have 67 or 71 or something instructors now globally, and about 11 to 15 of them, depending on which day you're talking about, because they are graduating. But there's something over around a dozen instructors in Germany alone. Mm-hmm. And then you have Scandinavia and Switzerland and mm-hmm. Austria, et cetera. And then you have England. So everything is kind of centered over there. But here we are in what we call the Mecca, Solvang, California. And they do have to travel a lot. So we had 20-some here, I don't know, but it was wonderful.
It was. It was impressive. You remember Dr. William Miller spoke, Dr. Andrew McLean.
Dr. Miller was here. McLean mm-hmm. was here. Andrew mm-hmm. McLean from Australia.
Yep.
He was
Lee
here.
Wills. Lee Wills
Lee
from
Wills
New Zealand.
Was here from New Zealand. She owns the art of dealing with weanlings in New Zealand. And we had...
It Katie Cunningham from Guatemala.
Guatemala was represented with a speaker, Katie Cunningham, which Katie's just moving up the ladder so fast, you know. She's thrown in with the Brook, and I am now an ambassador of the Brook.
That's
the Brook,
right. You became an ambassador, too.
I'm an ambassador. About that time, I became an mm-hmm. ambassador to the Brook. Mm-hmm. And the Brook is a global foundation that has been instituted for the care and improvement of the life of equine animals in service to human beings. Mm-hmm. And that is globally. And, I'll tell you more about that later. But anyway, I became an ambassador of the Brook, and there was Katie Cunningham speaking, and we had Rosie Jones from England, who's now at Cambridge getting her doctorate. Can you believe it? And getting her doctorate in equine behavioral sciences. And she gave a paper on certain aspects of behavioral patterns of the equine animal that was really interesting and all the instructors found it to be a greatly edifying situation with all of these speakers there. It was a fantastic week.
I
was getting ready to go off to England at that time because I was sending them back to England and Germany, et cetera, but already thinking about the fall tour. And I had this horse back here that I had to get right before I left, and I was getting all my interns in line to get that going. And working with my deer through the summer, too, wild deer here, that was really gratifying. And I came up with a strong indication that this ritualistic habituation is a bona fide science that I'm finding more and more use for. Today I worked, this morning I worked on ritualistic habituation with this one particular horse, and was it was so unbelievably successful. It's a whole new thought pattern about training horses that I think we've had, I'll say, wrong for 6,000 years. Mm. And I don't mean that anybody was wrong. We were just uninformed. And it has to do with things like you teach a horse to turn around. Okay, so you turn him around left and right each day. Wrong. Turn him around one way till he gets that right. And then turn him around the other way till he gets that right.
What is
create
right?
A ritual.
Like, is it, yeah, so I agree with you. So getting it right looks like what? When he's finally relaxed?
Well, getting it right depends on whether he's a dressage horse or a Western horse or a show jumper. Getting it right might have a different look to it. But when you say you're an expert in whatever discipline you're working, when you say it's right, then do it until he can't get it wrong.
Good.
And then move on to the next item, which might be turning but in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or it might be stopping, or it might be jumping a fence, or it might be piaf or passage in dressage. So it's incredible how we've missed this, because we mix horses up, giving them too many messages in a given day. Their mind is in a narrow channel, so we ought to operate in a narrow channel. And if we operate in a narrow channel, they'll say, hey, I get this. Mm-hmm. I got it. Look at me. I can do this. Then you move on and stretch it a little bit and go slightly askance to where you've been, and you take on the next challenge. It's unbelievable how much better that works than trying to give them five or six messages in the same day. I.e., the Western trainer often turns left, turns right, changes leads, and stops, all in a given day. Wrong. I'm telling you, the world will know in the next couple of years, the world will know that's wrong. Work on one thing until he gets it right. Give him a chance to repeat it until he gets it right. Ritualistic, create a ritual, and then habituate to that ritual until he gets it right, and reserves it to muscle memory so that he can't get it wrong, and then move on. Some people will say, oh, that'll just cause him to only want to do the one thing. Yep, you're sure right. And then when you stretch him a little bit, they'll go to another thing. I'm telling you, it works. I'm so excited about it. I can't begin to tell you.
Our willing partners,
which I worked using these techniques all summer, they're learning so much faster now that there's not words to describe it.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter. I know that you tell me that the equus language is universal amongst horses, that there's maybe some accents because of the predatorial environment that they have. So a horse in Australia might have a little bit of a different predatorial instinct or language than a South African horse. But universally, this ritualistic habituation is helping horses, you believe?
Oh, absolutely. It's helping horses and people, too. We're staying safer. We're not mixing up our messages. We're not getting frustrated.
Okay.
Fewer horses will be struck with a whip. Fewer horses will be stabbed with a spur because frustration sets in with a trainer when they when they get it wrong through mixing the messages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. And that reminds me of the Horse Sense and Healing, too, because you had a name change. You went on a media tour, I know, in August. You were on Good Morning America and did some of these things so that you were exposing Horse Sense and Healing. So now tell us how the healing starts happening in your program.
Well, the military thing has been really big for me, and we have an enormous event coming up this coming Saturday night.
Yes,
on this business of working with the military people. It's so exciting. We have some real high-level celebrities coming to see it, and I think we have 15 or 20 military people already registered for this particular clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working in England, too, with Help for Heroes over there. And I did 32 men and women in one day, 16 join-ups before lunch and 16 after lunch with assistants. And I did the interviews, one-on-one interviews with them to try to help. And 100% of them at the end of the day said that this was better therapy than they'd ever had from the regular system of dealing with military returnees. So I'm really proud of that, and we're continuing to work on it, and we've got to get dates to England, Debbie, as soon as possible for a March 3-day over there. We've got to get dates to those people. They're asking me for it as soon
Great.
As possible.
Okay, let's do
yeah.
it. Okay.
And so I did that. I had two clinics over there in England this year that were just off the charts wonderful. And I can't go past the feeling that I have for the good that the Hoys is doing. The Horse of the Year Show England, mm-hmm. Hoys mm-hmm. for short, mm-hmm. They had a situation this year which really proved their worth. They had a guy come in with a circus horse, and they often have these ancillary events, which they do during the competition just for the entertainment of the audience, you know. And they have each year one of the world's famous Liberty acts, yeah? Mm-hmm. And this year they had a particular guy that came with high recommendations and stuff. I think he came from Spain or Italy, I'm not sure. And the horses were frightened and they ran out of the arena. And one day into the show, these poor people had to do something, and it had to include sending this guy home. And they stopped it all and sent him home. And they immediately got on the phones, and they found a group of kids in Scotland that they brought down to Hoys and Birmingham. It is in the first week in October.
Right.
And they brought these kids down, a vaulting team. And I was asked to go there, as I have been for 10 years in a row now, to present the awards for the biggest event of the night, which is the finals of the show jumping. But anyway, I did that. But I'm there as a guest in black tie now. Come on.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
Tails, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And so I'm there to watch the whole show, yeah? And they told me about this thing. I never was in favor of these Liberty horses being there in the first place. But here they come in with this group of kids from Scotland. And I want to tell you, they stood the crowd on its ear.
Liberty.
It was unbelievable.
Awesome.
These kids are so good. And the horses are treated so well. And they're healthy horses that are happy and going around there doing their thing without any painful look on their face or their mm-hmm. ears back or their mouth open and all those
yeah.
things that Liberty horses often do. And I don't want to just badmouth Liberty horses because we have some students that are really working to take the
really
pain
good. Yeah.
and
uh-huh.
violence out of the Liberty thing, you know. So there's nothing wrong with any discipline. It's only the people that conduct it. And so I sat there and I watched these kids, and they brought pride to the UK family like you cannot believe. This Horse of the Year show came out on the long end of this thing. They really did a job landing on the right foot in a challenging situation.
Fantastic.
And I want to give them the most credit possible for the things that they're doing. They're working
Great.
Every year to make the rules for their competitions more user-friendly for the horses and more user-friendly for the people too, and they need to be given credit for that. But probably the most gratifying thing that I had in 2014 was the performance of the Queen's next crop of thoroughbred youngsters. I had a team at Polehampton for Her Majesty that worked under my direction to prepare the babies for their first rider. And they did such a job that I started out with 16 head, and there'd be 22 head in all, but I started with 16 head for the first spate of youngsters to go through the program. And Debbie, I put the first rider on 16 head between 8 and 12:30 in the first day. Now, they not only first rider on, but they walked, trot, and cantered. And they did so in a round pen and in a riding ring, manège, a large area. Each one of them did it. And the second day, they were going in pairs. And it was unbelievable. No horses bucking, no horses kicking, no horses causing any problem at all. The Queen was there 3 days later, stood in the middle of the manège, and the babies trotted around her, and she told me it was one of the most gratifying things she'd ever seen. And I know that if Guinness Book had a chapter for this, that my 16 horses would be the most first rider horses any trainer has ever put on in the one day, using no violence whatsoever, and having
happy,
nothing buck.
Happy horses. Having no bucks. No bucks. Look at that. First saddle.
But they were properly prepared. These kids did such a fantastic job. There's a lady that runs Polehampton called Rochelle Murat, and she did such an incredible job with her team, as Megan and Stacy and John on the team, and they just blow my mind. I don't know what I can do to reward them for this incredible performance. And then
wow,
I had
a good
Adrian
shout out
and,
to them.
And Jake, two kids from England that ride for me on my tours. I had them getting on, and not one was not only not bucked off, but they not even bucked with in the first 7 days of riding. And then I was off on my tours, of which I think I had two of my eight venues right on top of the list of the best venues I've ever done in my entire career.
It just gets
better. It was incredible. And only surpassed by my last one in Germany, which I think the whole thing should be on the uni or some way it should be saved, because it was absolutely incredible what happened. And I got a 7-minute standing ovation in Germany, where I've never had a standing ovation of any length.
Yeah, before. They can cross their arms a little bit over there. They can be critical, and they're hard to please because they have a huge long tradition of excellent horse training. So they know good horse training when they see it, and that's
it was unbelievable. I had one horse called Enjoy that didn't enjoy his life at all before I met him. But it was what he did for this audience was just off the charts.
That's
and
fantastic.
Then I had one ridden 30 miles to come there.
Oh, and, one of the, for a trailer loading?
Yeah, 5 years they'd been trying to load him in a trailer.
I love those stories.
And everything.
I love those
yeah,
stories.
Yeah, and it went beautifully too. And I got home here 2 days before Thanksgiving, had Thanksgiving, and went right to work with the Brazilian team and others. I don't know how many clinics I've had since I've been home. I've lost track of it. But
You've had a hugely busy year, and that's why I wanted to get it down your year in review, because I don't think anybody would believe it if we just wrote it down. If they didn't hear it right from you, I think it would be incredible.
Yeah, and Debbie, in April 28th, I had that surgery, you know, and for a year and a half before that, they had not let me do any exercise because of the surgeries I was going through for old man stuff. But anyway, 6 weeks after that, they turned me loose and said I could do exercises because it was finally a successful surgery and it was healed and everything is okay. So I decided, Debbie, I'd try to find out how many push-ups I could do anymore from the floor, recognizing that I'm in my 80th year. But how many push-ups could I do? Four of them. Four, Debbie.
Yeah.
First, the end of August, I could do four push-ups. And I just said, you know, you're going to get in shape, Mr. Roberts, and you're going to come back and you're going to be a role model for these people.
You talked to yourself like that, yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to weigh about 190 because that's what I weighed when I graduated high school. And that's what
tough.
I weighed this morning. What?
Good job. That's tough.
Yeah, and that's what I weighed this morning. And that's a loss of 80 pounds since they diagnosed me type 2. And so then I took off.
That ought to be a lesson to everybody. Listen.
When I left for India, I had it up to 12 push-ups. And when I got to India, I met Satish Simar, one of our foster sons that's over there now because he runs Sheikh Mohammed's thing in Dubai. But anyway, he's from India, and Satish was so impressed with me doing 12 that I was stoked, and I kept working. And by the time I left India 8 days later, I was up to 30 or 35, something like that.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And it came to me, Debbie, that my birthday, my next birthday, May 14, I'll be 80. Now, that means I've completed my 80th year. But
right.
I'll be 80. That's my 80th birthday, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
Okay. So, all of 2015, I want you to promote all of my tours are going to be 80 at 80, which means I'm going to do 80 successive nonstop push-ups.
Are you sure?
I'm
going to
do 80 successive nonstop push-ups at 80 years. 80
Sound
at
pretty
80.
Confident. Okay.
Yeah.
What are you up to right now?
I'm not telling you.
Oh.
I'm not telling you. I might not make it.
Oh, that's true. But you've
but
got
they're
a goal.
They're building me a board to go in the round pen so I can show every audience that I'm a good role model and I can do 80 at 80.
Yes, you are.
And the board is because, you know, there's horse manure in the bottom of those round pens and there's sand and everything.
Oh,
I don't want to get
my
clothes dirty and everything. So they're building me a kind of a board table-like that I can do my push-ups on. And anybody that comes to one of my demonstrations in 2015 is going to see 80 at 80. I'm absolutely obsessed with it. I'm going to do it.
I believe you. I bet everybody else listening believes you too. But now you got to prove it. So I guess that's what you do. You set that goal out there. You're so competitive. I love that. With yourself. Well, it's great. It's great. It keeps you stoked. It keeps more horses happier because you get to be working with them on tour. And I'm really glad. I'm so proud of what you did this last year. It's an unbelievable feat of nothing else but surviving. You do.
And here I am at 80. Really I went to the doctor yesterday for a general checkup, you know. And for those of you that know medical things, my blood pressure was 107 over 55. My pulse rate was 54, and my entire blood picture is right in the normal range, right across the board.
That's
so
awesome.
He says I have at least 25 more years. A lot of people will hate that, but anyway,
I don't think
they're
so.
Stuck with me.
I want a signature on in the bottom of that. You know, it's an agreement. It's recorded now, right, Glenn? We got this recorded, so it's staying with us.
Yeah.
Well, thank
you, Glenn. Are you asleep yet?
I'm here. I'm listening. I'm only 52 and I can't, the thought of doing 80 push-ups makes me break out in the sweat. So
I have an Ironman on my team over there on the Queens thing, you know, and he's had some injuries and stuff and he's no longer in competition in the Ironman thing. But when I told him that I was going for 80, he got really fired up, you know, and then he came back and he said, oh, my God, how many did you say you did? And I said, I'm up to 65 now. And he said, oh, I couldn't squeeze out my 52nd. I did 51 and that was it. And this guy's 38 years old or something. Or no, I think he's actually 32 or something like that. And a really fit guy. So I'm bragging now, but it's not really bragging because all of us can do it if we just get our heads around it. And staying fit is a big gift to your horse. You get on better, you sit better, and you get off better. So getting fit, staying fit is not only a gift to yourself, it's a tremendous gift to your horse. And the greatest gift we can give anybody else is our time. And if we give our time, we will be a role model. We don't have anything else to give. You can't give money and call it a gift. You can't give things and call them a gift when you can compare that with time. Time to help, time to assist, time to love, cherish, and to respect the others around us. In your 80th year, you'll see that you'll come full circle to think that way, too.
Mm, nicely said. Well, that's a great Merry Christmas wish and an end of a year and a nice send-off for 2015. Thank you very much.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Yeah.
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, the two-legged and the four-legged kind, in Arizona, March 14th. Monty will be back in the USA in Arizona. And then March 24, 26, and 28, he's back in the old United Kingdom. He'll be in Kent, Essex, and Somerset.
And you can see more of Monty's schedule at montyroberts.com if you want to find out all the details, like where he is in Arizona. Monty's calendar can be found there, or you can give a call at 1-805-688-6288. They have some terrific people that man the phones there at the ranch and can answer any of the questions that you have.
Happy to.
For details about today's show, go to horsemanshipradio.com, where you can find the links, photos, and more information about our guests. The easiest way to listen to the show is our app. Just go to the Horse Radio, search for Horse Radio Network in the iOS or Android app store on your phone or your iPad, whatever, and you just download the free app. It's the simplest, easiest way to listen to Horsemanship Radio and all the shows on the Horse Radio Network. As always, we love your feedback. Please follow us on Facebook under facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts.
And many thanks to our sponsors. Be sure to visit the other great shows on Horse Radio Network, too, at www.horseradionetwork.com. And until next time, have many happy horse hours. Merry Christmas, everyone.